them. It's on every Shabbat, of course, there's a Torah reading and there's also a Haftarah reading. It's interesting to note, although in kind of Ashkenazic Hebrew we refer to the Haftarah as a Haftorah, you might think that it's a play on the word Torah, but it's not. The word Haftarah is an entirely different word. While the word Torah means Torah, we won't dive into that, but the word Haftarah comes from the word Liftor, which means to conclude. The Haftarah reading, well known to all of us, is the conclusion of the cycle of public readings. Some interesting notes about this in particular, that is, that in the earliest origins of the Haftorah reading, which date back roughly to about 2,200 years ago, whatever commentaries or teaching that took place in what was then synagogues never were directed generally to the Torah reading. It was always directed to the Haftorah reading. In other words, the rabbis, or whatever they called them back then, the rabbis spoke about the Haftarah and not about the Torah. Things have changed, certainly, and generally what you find in rabbis' comments, they talk about the Torah reading and they ignore the Haftorah reading. But this morning, that won't be the case. The Haftarah this morning comes by way of the hands of a prophet named Yechezkel, Ezekiel. When did Ezekiel live? Ezekiel lived roughly about 570 to about 620 before the Common Era. If you were to put that paper to pen, it would be about 1700 years ago. And Ezekiel basically lived his entire life, in Babylon. Meaning that he was the child of the destruction of the first temple, and then the Jews were exiled and they went to Babylon. And the great Jewish communities of what became the Babylonian diaspora, he was a child of. We know also that his prophecies and writings generally weren't written by him. And it's proof of the way that the Hebrew is written. The Hebrew is extraordinarily beautiful and refined. Something that we don't believe would have been possible or appropriate, certainly given the context of what took place in Babylon. But of interesting note, in the Iraqi city of Al-Kifil, which is roughly in the center of Iraq, if you were to kind of go midway in and just a little bit south down, Al-Kifil is, there's a synagogue there that is built next door to what is believed to be the tomb of Yechezkel of Ezekiel. There are records of, before 1950, of thousands upon thousands of Jews visiting his grave on Chol HaMoed Pesach, which is where we find ourselves now. In 1950, why did that come to an end? In 1950, as many of you in fact know, nearly 800,000 Jews were forcibly exiled out of their homes in the Arab countries. And they spread all throughout the world. A significant majority of them ended up in Israel. Today, the synagogue has been nearly razed and a mosque has been built on it and with it, erasing essentially the thousands of years of Jewish history that were attributed to that site. I read that if you go into the one area where the mosque is an old quarter area, and there is still some Hebrew writing on the walls pointing to the names of three particular prominent Iraqi families that funded the building and the maintenance of that synagogue next to Ezekiel's grave. And why is this important to us? Because the Haftorah for this morning comes by way of the prophet Ezekiel. And we read it, I suspect, because of the long and powerful connection that Ezekiel has with Chol HaMoed Pesach. The message that Ezekiel Yechezkel has in Chol HaMoed Pesach resounds not only with us, but clearly for thousands of years of Jews who lived in Iraq, that they would make their way to his tombstone, to his gravesite, as a way of marking, remembering, and celebrating the unique and powerful message that Yechezkel Ezekiel brought. And what was the message? The message from the Haftorah this morning is given a name. It is called the Valley of the Dry Bones. The Valley of the Dry Bones is this prophetic, mystical, poetic kind of idea where Ezekiel is visited by God, and in a vision he is brought to a valley. And this valley is filled with bones that are dry. In other words, that the people or the remnants of these bodies are not recent, but they are aged and old and ancient. There's nothing left on them except the bones. And God has a message for Ezekiel to carry to those bones. And that is that they can come back to life. Now, there are generally two schools of thought in the interpretation of the story of the Valley of the Dry Bones. And they break down into two neat kind of categories. There's one set of categories beautifully expressed by the Spanish rabbinic commentator, the Abarbanel, who says that the story of the Valley of the Dry Bones is a prophetic foreshadowing of the belief in Tchiyat HaMetim, in the revivification of those who are no longer alive. In other words, the belief that when the Messiah comes, that all the people who are no longer alive will be brought back to life and brought back to the land of Israel. Maimonides brings this down as one of the core elements of things that Jews are supposed to believe, but it's obviously problematic. And not the least of which being is that much of the things that prophets write about are metaphors. On the metaphorical side is a whole school of commentary thought led by Rashi and others who say, no, it doesn't talk about bringing back the dead to life. Ezekiel is talking about us, about the long story of the Jews being in exile, because Ezekiel, the Chizkiel, lived in exile. The vision that he has isn't where God brings him back to the land of Israel, but he brings him in the center of wherever he's living, clearly in Mesopotamia, in Babylon. And he tells him, look at what's around you. It's not what you think. It's different. This idea, the second school of thought about the story of the Valley of the Dry Bones, is the one that by and large has carried itself in the largest story and imagination Jews have understood, the Haftorah that we read on Chol HaMoed Pesach, on the Shabbat of today. And in fact, the next time you go to Israel, and it should be soon, God willing, and you go to Yerushalayim, to Jerusalem, you'll see the famous 50-foot-high menorah that stands opposite the entrance of the Knesset. The story of that menorah was gifted by the British Empire in 1953, and it was an English, German, Hungarian, Jewish sculptor by the name of Elu Benkin, who worked 6 years to bring it to life. And in one of the panels is the story of the Valley of the Dry Bones. He brings it to life in the sculpture. And of all the interpretations that he imagined of what the Valley of the Dry Bones might mean for a menorah standing opposite the entrance of the parliament building of the State of Israel, which ones does Benkin choose? He chooses the idea that it represents us. That when God tells Ezekiel to stand in the middle of a valley surrounded by dry bones and to look at what he sees, that he is supposed to imagine what the Jews, the Israelites, were and have been, and then imagine something greater. This idea of what it means finds its way even deeper into our history and touches us even to this day. And that is, it reaches into the life of a Jew who was born in Zlochev, Galicia, and then roughly around the age of 17 or 18 years old, he picks up and leaves home, maybe even earlier, and begins this peripatetic wandering throughout the world. He makes his way to the Austro-Hungarian Empire. He makes his way to the Ottoman Empire. He makes his way actually to what was then Ottoman Palestine. Then he makes his way to America. He's in New York, he's in Chicago, he's in San Francisco, he's thrown in jail in San Francisco. He makes his way back to New York, where he dies penniless, a drunkard, on the streets of New York. Who am I referring to? His name is Naftali Herz Imber. Herz Imber wrote a poem in 1877 in Hebrew when he was making his way through the Ottoman Empire on his way to the Ottoman Palestine. He publishes it in a book, a small pamphlet of poems called Bar Kai. About 10 years later, Samuel Cohen puts some music to one of the poems in that small book. The poem Imber calls is Tikvatenu. And why does he call it Tikvatenu? He calls it Tikvatenu because, reading, you pass me the Chumash over there. Thank you. It's a good thing my wife's here. Because of this verse from the Haftorah that we read on this morning. It's in verse 10, and it reads as follows. V'yomer Eli, and he said to me, this is Ezekiel speaking, of God saying to him, Ben Adam, son of man, Ha'atzma'ot e'ilu, these bones, kol Beit Yisrael hema, it is the house of Israel. Hine omrim, and there are those who will say, Yevoshu atzmatenu, that these bones are dry, v'avda tikvatenu, and they have lost their hope. And so Imber turns around and writes a song, a poem that becomes a song, that what some might think to be the loss of our hope, in the imagination of Ezekiel, is actually the seeds and the roots of something more beautiful about to happen. It is this reason, I believe, that there are reports that emerged, recorded reports that emerged during the Shoah, during the Holocaust, of Czech Jews on their way to the gas chambers singing this as the last things on their lips. That there's a BBC recording, which I know you have heard, even if you don't know the source of where it came from, that after the liberation of Bergen-Belsen, that BBC reporters recorded the inmates, the former inmates, singing the Hatikva, the song that Imber wrote, inspired unquestionably by the writings of Ezekiel, because he grew up in a religious home. He knew those words. And last but certainly not least, Ezekiel may have been speaking to the people in the Babylonian Empire, and Naftali Imber may have very well been speaking to the Jews who were suffering immeasurable horrors and suffering during their period in Europe. But it speaks to us too, because the story of Ezekiel, and echoed by Imber, is the story of realizing that when you're in the middle of a very difficult and painful moment, what God is saying to us is that it is not lost, that there is no despair, that there should only be a confidence, and in the words of Ezekiel at the very end, v'chi itanu, and they shall endure. It was true then, it is true now, it will always be true. Shabbat Shalom.